ऐसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। कंतराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। ऑगस्ट श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 56, the Syamantaka Jewel, text 29 through, 37. There's only one short purport at the very end. I was thinking how Prabhupada used to always criticize the Bhagavatam commentators, the rascal commentators. And he would say, you think Krishna has left Bhagavad Gita to be clarified by some rascal like you? So I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has left this to be commented on by a rascal like me. But he hasn't made any comments. Anyway, we'll see what we can do. So let's chant together in unison up to the last verse, and then we'll chant that one. Or maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just chant these together. So we'll go slowly through the Sanskrit. Iti vigyata vigyanam riksharajanam achyutaha vyajahara maharaja bhagavan devaki sutaha abhim rishyavarindaksha panina shankarenatam kripaya paraya bhaktam Megadambhiraya Gira. Shukadev Goswami continued, O King, Lord Krishna then addressed the King of the Bears, who had understood the truth. The lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, touched Jambavan with his hand, which bestows all blessings, and spoke to his devotee with sublime compassion, his grave voice deeply resounding like a cloud. Mani he toriha prapta vayam riksha pate bilam mitya bhishapam pangvijyan atmano maniyamuna. Lord Krishna said, it is for this jewel, O Lord of the Bears, that we have come to your cave. I intend to use the jewel to disprove the false accusations against me. Ityukta swam duhitaram kanyam jambhavatim muda ahanartam samanina krishnayopajaharaha. Thus addressed Jambavan happily honored Lord Krishna by offering him his maiden daughter Jambavati together with the jewel. Adrishtva nirgamam shaure pravishtasya bilam janaha pratiksha dvadashahani dhukita swapuram yayu. After Lord Shauri had entered the cave, the people of Dwarka who had accompanied him had waited 12 days without seeing him come out again. Finally, they had given up and returned to their city in great sorrow. Nishamya Devaki Devi Rukminyana Kadundubi Surido Gyatayo Shochan Bilat Krishna Manirgatam. When Devaki, Rukmini Devi, Vasudev, and the Lord's other relatives and friends heard that he had not come out of the cave, they all lamented.
Sutrajitam shapantaste dhukita dwarakaukasaha upatastus chandrabhagam durgam krishno palabdhaye.
Cursing Sutrajit, The powerful residents of Dwarka approached the Durga deity named Chandrabhaga and prayed to her for Krishna's return.
Desham tu devyupastanat pratyadishtashishat sacha pradurbhabhu vasidhartha sudaro harshayan hari.
When the citizens had finished worshipping the demigoddess, she spoke to them in response, promising to grant their request. Just then, Lord Krishna, who had achieved his purpose, appeared before them in the company of his new wife, filling them with joy. So let's do the last one together, too.
Upalabhya Rishikesham Mritam Punaribhagatam Sahapatnya Manigrivam Sarvejata Mahotsava.
Seeing Lord Rishikesh return as if from death, accompanied by his new wife and wearing the Syamantaka jewel on his neck, all the people were roused to jubilation. Purport. According to Srila Bishwanath Chakravarti, Jambavan had placed the jewel on the Lord's neck when he had presented his daughter in marriage. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha.
Here we see
Jambavan is referred to as the king of the bears. Apparently there's some question about what kind of creature he is exactly. I think probably calls him a gorilla. And somewhere I read, when I can't find things in our books, then I go to the internet trying to find it. And someone there said that Jambavan is the creature just below humans, whatever that is. The missing link, I guess, is Jambavan. So anyway, here he's described as the Raja of the rikshas, whatever they are. Here they're described, they've translated it as bears, king of the bears, which always raises the question, what does his daughter look like? So maybe she's the next first human. He's the missing link. So anyway, we assume that she had a human form somehow or other. It's beautiful. She must have been a beautiful daughter. Krishna's second wife. So we have this story unfolding here. Krishna in the residence of Dwarka. Krishna wanted to protect his good name. He was being slandered. Suspicion had been aroused about his character. So he went with some of the citizens to track down the jewel. And finally they found it. Krishna went into the cave. The cave Bila, the word is Bila. Bila, actually the word means hole. Like Bila Swarga, the subterranean heavenly planets. You go through the hole in the earth to get to the Bila Swarga. Bile bato rukrama vikramanye, the holes of snakes. Same word is used. So the word for cave is also Bila. So here it said earlier, text number 19, the Lord stationed his subjects outside the terrifying pitch-dark cave of the king of the bears, and then he entered alone. So he told them, wait outside, I'll go in alone. Andhena tamasa, blinding darkness. So apparently they didn't have any torches with them or any way to light. But Krishna's effulgence could light the way. So he went in alone. And then Krishna, of course, after the fight, fought for 28 days, which seems to be that word, that period of time seems to come up repeatedly in the Bhagavatam. I notice how certain phrases, they kind of get repeated. Like whenever you read a description of a very palatial house, you always hear a description of the bedding. Does anyone remember what they say about the bedding, why it's said? Soft as the foam of milk, right? It's always as soft as the foam of milk. So the fights seem to go on for 28 days. I guess that's a sort of a cycle of the moon, so maybe that has something to do with it. So they fought for 28 days. Now we hear about how Krishna, he wants to have a good fight, so he has to have one of his devotees do it. But even then you think, well, how much, what's his devotee? His devotee can't really fight against Krishna either, any more than anybody else can. But what Krishna does, of course, it's all Leela. And we were hearing from Dhruva Maharaj on Saturday how Krishna, he gets completely absorbed when he takes on some role. He loses himself in the role. So he empowers his devotee to fight ferociously, and he somehow or other gets into it, and it's believable. It's believable to him that he's actually fighting with a great powerful opponent. So after it was finished and Jambavan offered his prayers, actually I just want to mention, so I just, my eyes glanced on this, just a little aside, footnote here. I came across recently that the daughter of Daksha, you know how the daughters of Daksha, they produce all the creatures in the universe, snakes and horses and everything. So the daughter who produced the fish is called Timi. I wonder if that has something to do with Timingala. The biggest fish is called Timingala. So maybe that's how he got his name. I'm just speculating, but I thought that was an interesting connection. Her name is Timi, the source of all the fish. So anyway, so they fought for 28 days, and we know, of course, that it is a show, because just like when Lord Varaha fought with Hiranyaksha, so it was a great ferocious battle. And at times the demigods were afraid. They thought, oh, looks like Vishnu might lose this one. They actually were concerned at certain points in the fight. But then at the end, Krishna showed, it's just a show, just with a little slap, the back of his hand behind his Hiranyaksha's ear, and it was finished. So he was revealing that, oh, this was all really just for show. So with Jambavan also, it was, of course, to fulfill the desire of the devotee. Jambavan has this relationship with the Lord somehow. He likes to, he's a fighter himself, and he must have wanted to. Krishna is fulfilling that desire. I just came across somewhere, Prabhupada was explaining that Krishna instills the desire within the heart of the devotee, then he fulfills the desire. So he actually gives us the desire to exchange in a certain way with him. Or we can say it's there within us, or at least in some kind of seed form. But Krishna inspires us, our awareness of it, that desire to reciprocate with Krishna in a certain way. So we want something from Krishna, and then Krishna gives it. So he gives the desire, and then he fulfills the desire. So Jambavan is getting his desire here fulfilled. And at the end, it said here that Krishna touched Jambavan with his hand. Now in the Krishna book, Prabhupada said that he took his soft lotus-like palm and rubbed it all over the body of Jambavan to soothe him, because they were fighting, so they had bruises all over the place. Naturally, they're beating each other with clubs and their fists and whatever else. They're fighting for 28 days, so you can imagine, be a little sore. So Krishna took his hand, as Prabhupada says, and rubbed it, soothed his body, like a mother soothing her child, which is actually what's going on here, of course. Jambavan, or all of us, we're all sons, children of Krishna. He has great love and affection for us. So he soothed Jambavan. So now we get to this curious part of the story. Sometimes when I read the Bhagavatam and I read stories and I say, this doesn't seem to make sense. Why would this happen this way? One day I was thinking that, and I thought, well, maybe it's done that way so we won't think it's just made up, because if somebody made it up, they wouldn't do it this way. If you were writing a novel, you wouldn't write the story this way. So when I read this, they stayed there for 12 days, and then they left, and then they just go back, and then they're just lamenting. And I think, well, wouldn't Ugrasena send an army out there? They're Kshatriyas, after all. Is the place so dark and terrible? Now, I can see why these ordinary citizens of Dwarka, they wouldn't want to go in. It's pitch black. They don't have any way to light the place, apparently. So they think, wow, what happened? Something. Of course, Yoga Maya is involved in all of this. But they're afraid, and they just go back, and they tell the others. I'm thinking, where's Balaram at this point? Balaram would go rushing out there. But nothing happens. They just wait. And then finally, Krishna shows up. Ta-da! Not only is he fine, but he's got a new bride at the same time. So we have to think that this is choreographed this way, written this way, scripted this way, because Krishna is scripting it, or his Leela Shakti is scripting it, ultimately for Krishna's pleasure. Now, the residents of Dwarka, they're... I was just hearing a lecture probably about in the section of the Bhagavatam where the Dwarka Vasis leave, the Yadus, the Moksha Leela, Krishna leaves the world, and the Yadus leave this world. So Prabhupada is explaining there in his lecture, it's just a stage. He used that word. He said, it's just a stage. They're killing each other. Some people think, oh, they're killing each other. This is horrible. They all killed each other. But Krishna wanted to take them away, to relieve the burden of the world. And he set up this way for them to do that. So he set up the stage. He arranged it so that this would happen. They would have this fight and destroy each other. So in that section, actually in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that the Yadu dynasty, they're all demigods. We hear in the beginning of the Krishna book, when Krishna decides, he responds to the plea of Bhumi Devi to come to the earth. He said, yes, I'll come. And then he tells the demigods to come too. He recruits them. So when Prabhupada says the Yadu dynasty is the demigods, well, Krishna recruited a lot of them, didn't he? He had so many millions. In this one lecture, Prabhupada said he had 1 crore of descendants. So that's 10 million. I don't know how the math works out, but we know from the Bhagavatam it says he had 16,108 wives. Each had 10 children, and each of those 10 children had 10 more children. So there were a lot of Yadus. But at this point, there are Yadus, but not the descendants of Krishna. Doesn't have any descendants yet, which is another thing I think of. How did they pack all those people into Dwarka, that little island of 10 square miles or whatever it was? It has 16,108 palaces, plus all the Yadu dynasty, because there was already a Yadu dynasty. When Krishna moved to Mathura, then there were already Yadus living there. He shipped all them to Dwarka. Then he brought in his own 16,108 wives and all their kids and grandchildren. And of course, Ugrasena's, however many, a quadrillion bodyguards is mentioned. So in one sense, I find it's not so hard to believe because we're talking about Dwarka, the spiritual world. So you can put an infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world in a limited, so-called limited amount of space. So in any case, there were these, at this point, there were just the fairly small number, relatively small number of Yadus. And their position in relationship to Krishna, it seems as if, from statements that Prabhupada has made, that they weren't really aware that he was God. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam also where it says that they were like a fish that sees the moon as one of them. So the fish are, you know, floating, swimming underwater, and they look up, and the moon is, of course, way outside, but they can see it through the water, some round thing, and they think, oh, you know, a moonfish or something. So they think, oh, there's another fish, but this fish is really a glowing fish. So they see Krishna as glowing. He has great qualities. And not necessarily do they see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and also, to corroborate this, Prabhupada would also say many times that there are only a few people who recognize Krishna as God. He would say sometimes, perhaps just a handful. The Pandavas and a few others knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many other people saw him, but they didn't see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Yadus, they're playing this role. They must have known at some point because Krishna told them to go. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arsa Britya. They're all his servants, all these demigods. They're all his servants. So he ordered them, I want you to go take birth here, and you can appear as my children and grandchildren. Help me in my mission. I'm going to earth on a mission. I want you to help me. So, at least in the beginning, they must have recognized that this order was coming from Lord Vishnu. But when they got here, apparently they forgot exactly what was going on. Or at least that seems to be what's being portrayed here. So they were concerned and they lamented. They were now one thing we can draw, one lesson we can draw from this is that we can also see it as yoga maya acting, that Krishna's increasing their desire for him, their concern, their love for him, their attachment to him by this separation. Because ordinarily they would see him every day. But we know that separation makes the heart grow fonder, as epitomized in the Brijabasis. So by creating this situation, Krishna's bringing them up. He's always bringing his devotees up, pulling them up to a higher level of devotion. Now, the spiritual master does this too. Often when I read Prabhupada's books, I see so many things where I'm always trying to find, you know, what's the bottom line here? What's the definitive statement? And I find so many things which appear to be contradictory. The only way I can justify it is that, well, the lessons are being given on different levels. Just like we've had discussions in the past about, you know, going back to Godhead. I gave a whole class about all the things Prabhupada says about what we have to do to go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada's always encouraging us. If you do a Veda-based search, you'll see over and over and over again, Prabhupada is telling us that the goal is to go back to Godhead. But at the same time, we know that the devotee is actually not even supposed to be concerned about that. So is he or not? Prabhupada's always encouraging us. But at the same time, actually, I've come across recently where the idea is that a devotee has no personal desires, really, and no aspiration to do more, you might say, because the devotee is fully satisfied. In the material world, heaven or hell, it doesn't matter. The devotee is just serving Krishna. He's absorbed in the moment, you might say, in the moment, in service to Krishna. So there's no thought that I have to do something else. We see this in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Of course, it doesn't last with Gopakumar. But initially, when he gets to some place, it's like he becomes completely absorbed. I'm just reading now in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar has left this universe and he's gotten into the plane of liberation where, what is he called? Mahakala. The form of the Lord there is Mahakala, who's considered to be a personification of Brahman. So he's like sometimes the impersonal Brahman and sometimes he has a form and he has this attraction where you feel like you want to merge into him. But at the same time, there's this intense ecstasy because you've left this world. So you're in this situation. So Gopakumar, when he gets into situations like this, he thinks, this is it. But then in the back of his mind, because he's a Gopal, Madan Gopal is his worshipful Lord. So he's always in the back, there's always this, or deep within his heart, this pull of going back to Vrindavan. He always, and eventually that returns. But then he sometimes gets distracted and he goes someplace else. But this idea is there that you become so absorbed in the moment of Krishna, then you don't think of anything else. So that idea is present also in instructions to the devotees or in the characterization of the pure devotee, that the pure devotee doesn't have any desire for more because he's completely satisfied in what he's doing. Then at the same time, of course, we're told, well, there's a progression. We're actually supposed to aspire to get to higher levels of Krishna consciousness. Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu, he always gives these very learned insights into pastimes of the gopis and Krishna and so on. So this is bona fide. We have this, of course, in our books, and we're supposed to nurture a desire to, because if we don't, then we will desire things of this world. So we have to have higher aspirations. But at the same time, I always feel there's a bit of a danger there, too, because one thing we might learn, another lesson I was thinking, this Dwarka pastime, is that these demigods, now they're just acting as servants. Krishna has asked him to play these roles, and they're playing the roles just as he wants them to. So ultimately, this should be our desire. I'm just the servant of Krishna. That's all I want to be, is the servant of Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants me to do, that's what I'll do. So with this thought, then the idea that, well, there's this higher, I could be a gopi. Oh, that sounds really attractive. I could be one of Krishna's gopis. So I'm thinking, in my level of consciousness, in the conditioned stage, to aspire for that, maybe there's a tinge of the desire to enjoy there, and not to be the servant. Maybe, I know myself, I always have to analyze my motives. Why am I doing this? Why am I thinking this way? Why do I desire this way? So if I have some aspiration to be a mandari, is it really purely spiritual? Or is it that I'm thinking, wow, that's the greatest. That's where you have the most fun. That's where you really enjoy when you're one of the gopis. Is that seed of desire within me, which is not a pure desire? In fact, the way it's portrayed in the Nectar of Devotion is when you're free of all your anartas, and then you start getting into the higher stages, nishta, ruchi, and so on, asakti, then you start feeling a natural pull from one of these relationships with Krishna, and you feel an attraction to someone who is the emblem of that relationship. You feel attracted to Nanda Maharaj, or you feel attracted to one of the gopis, because really you want to take shelter and learn from them. So that's a spontaneous desire that arises from within the heart. So, in our stage of Krishna consciousness, well, at least my stage, I feel like the guiding principle is I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, of course, is what how we consider ourselves. I have only desire, my only desire is to Guru Mukha, how is it? Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitte Te Koriya Agya. May my consciousness be one with the words emanating from the mouth of my spiritual master. So this is our fixation. What does my spiritual master want? What does Srila Prabhupada want from me at this stage of my life? I've repeatedly come across also the idea that perfection for the sadhana is to do exactly what you're supposed to do at your stage that you're on. Don't try to do more than you're qualified for, you might say. But wherever you are, try to understand that, be introspective, be honest with yourself, and do what you need to go on from there. Now we know, of course, so that's another reason why we might say that we can hear different instructions from Srila Prabhupada. There, and according to our level, we may be able to accept more. One thing I hear repeatedly, Prabhupada wants us to preach. There's no question about it. Practically every lecture, Prabhupada is telling us to preach. The question came up the other day in Madan Mohan's class. Jamasmi Prabhu was asking about, you know, how do we accelerate this purification? So one answer Prabhupada gave to that was, preach vigorously, like I... Practically, I'm beating them, Prabhupada said. So, when I hear that kind of thing, I think, well, what about what Prabhupada said? No, just chant Hare Krishna all day long, spend your whole day hearing. If you have a moment, read my books. A lot of times I think, I wish this was the Shravanam movement rather than the Sankirtan movement, because it's a lot easier to be absorbed in Shravanam than in Kirtanam, especially when Kirtanam means to preach, as the way Prabhupada expanded it. It's much harder to preach Krishna consciousness than it is to just hear. So, but not everyone is ready for that, you might say. It's a great austerity to face the opposition. Of course, they're not the opposition. Another thing I heard Prabhupada say in a class recently, he was talking about how the non-devotees are all Jagais and Madhais. Today, Nityananda had to, you know, deal with one pair of Jagai and Madhai, but now everyone is Jagai and Madhai. But Prabhupada, I don't know exactly what the words he said, but the general idea was we should be grateful for them because they allow us to engage in the mission of Lord Chaitanya. They allow us to serve Lord Chaitanya. If there weren't any Jagais and Madhais, then we wouldn't be able to have anybody to preach to. So we should be grateful that they're there and they're Jagais and Madhais that we face and we become quickly purified by approaching them. So, of course, not all of us are able to take that instruction. In one sense, you might say that's the highest instruction, to give, to shed, just like if we hear, we should be really ready to shed gallons of blood. So most of us might recoil when we hear that. Boy, I don't know. I don't want to even give a pint of blood, what to speak of gallons. So, but that the instructions are there. So even for us in our, as we progress in Krishna consciousness, but we have to do what we can do. But at the same time, the principle is there that we always have to, we can't be complacent. We have to want, in that sense, to do more. And really understand the mood, Srila Prabhupada's mood. He's our founder, Acharya. And I think it's abundantly clear what Prabhupada's mood was. He was a preacher through and through. And Srila Prabhupada saw this as Siddhanta, not just that, well, this is what I think, but this is what Lord Chaitanya said. Lord Chaitanya ordered us to preach, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Just yesterday I was hearing, as I was hearing lectures, you should go door to door, village to village, town to town. Actually, this phrase comes up a lot, door to door. Kali Upani Prabhu is leading out door to door preachers. So Prabhupada gives it a lot, door to door. So certainly that was there, and certainly Prabhupada is pleased when that is going on. So this, I think this is the mood that we have to cultivate. I want to be the servant. What does Prabhupada want from me? And this was one lesson that I drew from this pastime, which I'm trying to get something. The acharyas haven't written anything, but how the residents of Dwarka, they're playing the role. When you come with Krishna on one of his trips, then you have a certain role to play in the whole road show, and you play your part. And that is what's pleasing to Krishna. So similarly with Srila Prabhupada, he's given us a mission. Now there's always a side of, well, we all have to cooperate together. We're like an army, so not everyone is in the infantry in the army. They have all so many different roles, which is something that I wrestle with a lot myself. Is that okay, really? That some of us are just cooks in the army? Or it's so many lectures, it sounds like Prabhupada wants all of us out on the front lines. That's what it sounds like. Then I think, well, maybe not every instruction is for every devotee. Then it's something I struggle with myself, whether all of these instructions are for everyone, or do we all have certain capabilities? Recently I was just thinking, in the Bhagavad Gita, I still struggle with the Bhagavad Gita. I can't figure out the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna says, Swakarmanatam Abhyarchya Siddhim Manati. What's the last word? Madhava. So he says, by doing your own work, you can attain perfection. But then just a few verses later, he says, Sarva Dharman Puritya, give up all your dharma, all your work, and become a preacher, he says after that. Give up your occupation, surrender everything, and go out and preach. Sounds like that's the way the Bhagavad Gita ends. But we hear that one of the main themes of Bhagavad Gita is, whatever your talent is, whatever your tendency is, whatever your dharma in Varnashram is, you just do that, you do that for Krishna, and you'll become perfect. But then at the end, it sounds like Krishna says, oh, forget everything I said, just become a Vaishnava. Maybe that's the key to the whole thing. A Vaishnava is supposed to be transcendental and be able to do anything for Krishna, can be empowered to do anything. That principle is also there. Prabhupada said impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. You might think, oh, I'm just an introvert. You know, I can't do that. I can't go face those people. No, you can't say impossible. Anyone can do anything if empowered by Krishna. So anyway, these are just some thoughts. I'm getting a little off track here, but so I'll stop, take some questions. Let me start over here.
You said that only a few people recognize Krishna when
he was
here.
Well, Prabhupada said.
Well, you said that Prabhupada said. But isn't there something in the Bhagavad Gita where Dhritarashtra is saying that Krishna is the personality of Godhead?
Yeah.
Maybe even Duryodhana, doesn't he also say that? But Dhritarashtra, I mean...
All I can say is... There are many things that Prabhupada says where you can say, well, isn't that, you know, you can always think of contradictory things, of many, many things that Prabhupada says. I come up against that all the time. Even in the Bhagavatam itself, I come up against things where I say, wait a minute, it says this here and it says this here. I'll give you one example. Bharat Maharaj, it says in the beginning of his story that he was destined to rule for 10 our Buddhas, or whatever, I forget what the words, but it's like 10 million years or something like that. Then it says at the end of that, then he left home and went to the forest. But we always hear Jaha Yuvaivambalavat, how he was a young man and he left his family. And Prabhupada says he was 24 years old. So, well, he was a king for 10 million years, but he left home at 24. So, anyway, I come across these kinds of things a lot. So you'll come across those things with Prabhupada too. Because I also think only a few people knew Krishna. It seems like quite a few people. But Prabhupada says it quite a few times, as far as I know. He makes this point that not very many people accept it. Now, one way is that Prabhupada, you might say, he goes into ecstasy and making his point, he sometimes, you might say, puts in a little transcendental exaggeration. So to make the point that what's the main point? The main point is even though Krishna was there in person, people didn't recognize that he was God. So then he would say only a few people recognize. So maybe we can expand that number a little bit. But that's because he's making a particular point in time, then he emphasizes a certain thing. And in another point time, he's making a different point. So he has the liberty to do that. Janmashtami Prabhu? I'll get you next, Mother Lakshmi Moni.
This point about many of the Yadus not knowing Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not necessarily a disadvantage, because Rupa Goswami, in his presentation on Raganuga Bhakti, starts with this verse from the 7th canto, 1st chapter, 31st verse, where it says, "My dear King Yudhisthira," this is Narada Muni speaking, "the gopis by their lusty desire, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and others by envy, and the Yadus by their familial relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have attained the mercy of Krishna." Mm-hmm. So then Rupa Goswami makes the point that the only two of these, six types of relationships, only two of them are actually Ragatmaka Bhakti, and that's the familial relationship that the Yadus have. And because, you know, the Pandavas flicker back, well, this is Krishna. Mm-hmm. No, this is my friend. You know, like Arjuna.
Yeah, the Yadus are a step higher than the Pandavas.
Right. So there's a higher ras because of that covering, you know, of the understanding that Krishna is God. That was one comment I had.
Doesn't it also say that they recognize him as the super soul? Somewhere that's stated, I think. The super soul dwelling among them. So that seems contradictory, but anyway, that's stated too.
I mean, sometimes there's it's not always, you know, free from Aishvarya Gyan, you know, the relationship with the Yadu. Sometimes they go into an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, as long as that's not there, then it's Ragatmaka Bhakti. The point about, you know, our aspirations, at least, you know, I think everyone can... It seems to me that the main point is that we should endeavor to try and give as much pleasure as possible to Krishna according to our capacities. That should be the introspective mood. You know, we just go to the max, you know, with that in mind, you know, to optimize the pleasure that we give to the spiritual master and to Krishna. And then it's not any kind of a self-aggrandizing mood or selfish. Is that... resonate? I mean,
yeah, I'm sort of thinking of something else, but I think it's interesting. I've always thought it's interesting that Well, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary, as Prabhupada said. So a pure devotee should, and you might say, can do anything. But we don't see that manifested in the lives of the acharyas, for example. Some are better than others at certain things. Even in Krishna's own, among Krishna's own cowherd boyfriends, it's mentioned in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says some could sing better than others. Well, why should some be able to sing better than others? They're all perfectly pure. So even among Vaishnavas, because like when you said that according to our personal capacity, well, why should our personal capacity be limited? That's what the thought that came to my mind. Maybe I'm shortchanging myself. Maybe I can do a lot more. Maybe I'm just being lazy and I'm saying, this is the best that I, this is who I am. I can't do any more than this. Jamashtami can do more than me because he's Jamashtami, but I'm just Nagaraj Das. What can I do?
It seems though that, you know, just as Krishna inspires us, you know, what type of relationship he wants with us, he also gives us that inspiration in service. You know, what areas that he wants us to go in. It seems like that's a continual flow for devotees, you know, where they should focus their energies.
We have to be open to it, to the inspiration. Lakshmi Moni Prabhu? Somebody can, yeah. You have 50 different thoughts going on at the same time.
Right? Yeah, flying around the room. I kind of lost where I was thinking. But just picking up what's going on here in this last statement is that each of us finds ourselves in a circumstance where we're able to use something in Krishna's service, and that's required. Like with Arjuna, he was a warrior, and he wanted to be a Sankirtan devotee, or at least he wanted to hear and chant. But in this particular circumstance, his skill as a warrior was essential. In another circumstance, his skill as a dancer and his musician was the service they had to do. And that seems very strange for Arjuna as a warrior. But the circumstances were such that that was what he had to do at that time. So, and then Prabhupada used that expression every now and again, jack of all trades, master of none. Mm-hmm. So he did encourage us to, you know, get into something and be good at it, perfect it, do it, and not try to do everything. Maybe we can do everything if we try to do everything, but we have a lifetime. You know, there's goalposts at the ends, and how we live the dash is, you know, it's a limited amount of time and energy. So Prabhupada wanted us to, you know, to serve to the maximum ability within that frame that we find ourselves able to push on the mission. Also, as far as preaching is concerned, because I had this discussion even with Srila Prabhupada via letter, because, you know, I was always on the serving end of the Sankirtan party. I was never very good at book distribution. So, you know, I went out a couple of times, and the women I was going out with were having competitions, how many $20 bills they can get and how many Bhagavad Gitas they could sell. And I was like, well, I got 50 cents, you know. So that was never my thing. But and especially at 55th Street, the you know, the cooking became something that really helped the Sankirtan devotees. They'd come home and they'd really relish whatever. So I got into doing that. And then at other times, I had other problems with it. And I wrote, and Prabhupada said, it's like two tracks of a train. The train can't run on one track. It's really important that it be there, but the other track also has to be there. So the deity worship, the temple activities, the Gurukula, all these things, they need to be there, even to allow the Sankirtan devotees to go out and tell somebody. And if the Sankirtan devotees go out there and they're successful, and someone comes back to the temple and the temple's deserted and they're not taken care of nicely and yada, 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 then their effort is somewhat hindered. And actually, in the strategic planning effort, and there was a big committee that was formed originally called, the Outreach Committee. And everyone wanted to be on it because, you know, Prabhupada said, like you said, outreach, it's where it's at. But that committee ultimately morphed into devotee care. Because in the discussion was, okay, we'll preach, but what will happen to the people that we preach to the temple? And we'll take care of them. So then devoted care was born out of that outreach, and now outreach is being born out of devoted care. So it's kind of a cyclical thing. It's all connected. Mm. When we separate it, it becomes confusing, but if connected, then I find it less confusing.
Yeah, one thing I find repeatedly with Prabhupada is you can't really hang your hat on one statement, one slogan, and make it say everything. Yet the other night we were chanting downtown, and I was all devotees were chanting together, and I thought, just think if Prabhupada came by right now with Krishna and said, "Let's go back to Godhead," you all get on. They came by in a bus. They wouldn't say, "No, you stay." They would say, "No, you all come on." So I think this kind of fits this metaphor. It's like we're all together as a group serving Krishna. So if Prabhupada came to pick us up, he'd take us all back to Godhead. So yeah, I mean, I like this, that idea that we're all working together. Still, I always have this, you know, in the back of my mind, well, who gets the Congressional Medal of Honor? It's not the guy on the desk, you know. It's the guy. So does the individual, is there more? When you're really putting it on the line for Krishna, are you going to make faster advancement? Now, another, I've thought of this, is that just like certain foods are good for you, like milk is good for you, but if you're lactose intolerant, then it's not good for you. So some of us, like not everyone can do that, can do the hardest thing. Maybe you do get more blessings by doing the hardest thing, but maybe not everybody can do the hardest thing. Yeah.
And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, you know, glorifying all the devotees and everything. And then he said, "Bring Sridhar here." And all of the devotees looked at each other and said, "Who's Sridhar? Where did how did he come into?" So he told them how to find him. He said, "You go to the end of the village, you'll find somebody screaming Hare Krishna at the top of his lungs. That's him. Bring him here." You know, he's living in a little grass hut, and he's selling banana leaves and leaf cups. But he got the full mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you know.
Yeah, ultimately, it's up to our devotion. Really, it comes down to our devotion, and how that's displayed or manifests may be different for different persons.
One thing I just thought of this second is that you're talking about the Congressional Medal of Honor, but with Krishna, there's unlimited medals of honor to go around. Everyone can get one.
Yeah. All right, should we stop? Yeah, let's stop. We're past time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.